From KMXT and Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund. In recognition of the fishing industry, which provides more than 50,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The Alaska Board of Fisheries considered four proposals at its meeting last week that would have significantly changed the rules for trawl fisheries in state waters, especially for pelagic or mid-water trawls. Proposal number 11 would have closed state waters to commercial groundfish fishing with trawl gear west of 170 degrees west longitude, essentially closing all waters inside 3 miles in the western Aleutian Islands and Bering Sea to dragging of any kind. Proposal number 163 would have defined all trawl gear operated inside state waters as non-pelagic and developed new performance and monitoring standards to allow state waters pelagic trawling to occur on a case-by-case basis. Proposal number 164 would have established bottom contact monitoring requirements for pelagic trawl gear operated inside state waters. In other words, pelagic trawlers would have been required to install equipment to show whether or not they are hitting the bottom. Finally, proposal number 165 would, quote, establish salmon excluder requirements for all pelagic trawl gear operated inside state waters, close quote. Public testimony was divided. The trawlers argued that their sector is a prime economic driver that would be harmed by the restrictions and that bycatch and bottom contact issues are being addressed on a federal level now. Proponents of the proposals said federal efforts have been too slow and that the state needed to step up. In the end, the board decided it was not ready to take action, at least not yet. Board member Tom Carpenter made the motion to take no action, but he does think the board should do something, namely convene a joint protocol committee with the North Pacific Fishery Management Council.
The board has the ability to use what is called the joint protocol committee, which is rarely used, frankly, which is made up of three Board of Fish members and three members from the council.
Board member Carpenter thinks the board can learn from the council.
There's a lot of knowledge that I believe that the council staff, which works on these issues on a very regular basis, and presents to the council too on a lot of the subject matter that is including in these proposals. And I think as a board member myself, the reason that I think this is the most appropriate approach at this time is I believe it's the board's duty to do as much due diligence before they take proposals, quite frankly, that we don't usually deal with all that often. This is kind of out of the realm a little bit. I don't know a lot about trawling compared to many other things and subjects around the state, and maybe that sentiment is felt from other members on the board.
Board member Mike Woods agreed and argued for caution moving forward.
Like a rescue situation, you don't want to just rush in and do something. Sometimes you should just stand there and make sure you don't do something wrong. And I really feel like we could potentially be in a position of just running in and doing something wrong. And I'd really like to educate myself on this and to move forward in the best, most durable way forward to make sure that whatever actions are taken are done correctly.
Fish and Game Commissioner Douglas Vincent Lang noted that the North Pacific Fishery Management Council is already working on the bottom contact issue.
We've heard loud and clear about bottom contact. We have plans underway at the council right now. Both National Marine Fisheries Service and State of Alaska are fully in concurrence that we need to get a better definition of what acceptable levels of bottom contact is with pelagic gear, because what we've done at the council level is in areas where we have habitat concern, we've eliminated bottom trawl gear, but we now realize that we have some contact with the bottom with pelagic gear. We're working very closely with industry and with universities to try to figure out how we can minimize that bottom contact and get actually an enforceable and measurable performance standard associated with it.
And he cautioned against separate and possibly contradictory actions by the board and council.
I worry that the board here takes an action, and then we have parallel fisheries, and then we have incongruent regulations between the two of them. So I think it's good that you two work together to try to resolve these issues and become aware of what each one of the entities are doing to address the issue. So I think this is a proper course of action, but I want you all to know that we've heard the issues with trawl fisheries. We've also heard the issues with bottom contact, and there is a lot of work undergoing to try to get enforceable and measurable standards in place, and hopefully when we have those, they'll be adopted by both regulatory bodies, because we have fisheries across jurisdictions.
Statewide support of the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Satellite Technical Services, providing satellite communication solutions for commercial fishermen across the state of Alaska. Information and dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Here is board member Olivia Hanayi Irwin.
So I'm having a little bit of a difficult time with this, just because I do believe that it's reasonable for the public to assume and expect that this board has the knowledge to be able to take action on these proposals. However, I do think that it is imperative to recognize that if the members of this body are acknowledging limitations in our understanding currently and are willing to add another meeting that will specifically go through these issues, provide additional time for us to be thorough, effective, and create meaningful, enforceable action, I do believe that this is a positive path forward. In no way do I see this as a deferral or a delay tactic for action.
Board member Curtis Chamberlain expressed his concern about over-examination.
One of my big fears, and this is something that's very prevalent in the business world, is paralysis by analysis. There is such a thing as studying something to death or being filibustered by analysis. You know, and one of my frustrations with the council is, it takes a lot of time to analyze things. And sometimes, you know, by the time the analysis is done, so is the damage.
But he agreed that more analysis was warranted in this case.
I don't think that this is going to have that strong of an effect over the short term to the point where I'm willing to forego analysis and take action on this particular proposal. So that, I'm okay with this.
Here is Board Chair Marit Carlson Van Dort.
A no action motion means that the proposal is effectively dead. And I want to speak to Mr. Chamberlain's points too, is that, and also to Ms. Irwin's points, is that I think that the perception of a delay tactic is real, but I think that the points that Member Carpenter have brought up are legitimate. And I think it does allow for this body to do a little bit more due diligence on some of the issues and outcomes.
Carlson Van Dort sketched out a possible way forward.
It would be my preference that through the committee process, the board work with the department and stakeholders on a potential board-generated proposal. I mean, that's part of the conversation that I would like to see happen at the joint protocol, and certainly amongst members of this board, about whether or not that would be something that could be an outcome of that committee process to be worked on over the interim, i.e. the summertime, potentially through the committee or not, and possibly come up with some kind of language that addresses some of the issues brought forth in these proposals by the next work session, which could potentially then be noticed properly through the APA and scheduled next cycle.
So, while the proposals are dead today, they could still be resurrected in the near future.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The numbers are in for Southeast Alaska's commercial Dungeness crab season. As reported by KFSK's Olivia Rose, participants harvested just over 2 million pounds of crab during the summer and fall-winter fisheries combined. With an estimated overall price averaging $4.17 a pound, the full season amounts to a total value of just over $8.5 million. That's according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, which manages the fishery. Joe Stratman is a regional shellfish biologist who's been crunching the numbers for the season. He says the full harvest came in lower than what the fishery has seen over the past 5 years or so.
I think you could say it was below average this summer. I think you could say it was below average for the fall winter. I think you could say it was below average for the full season combined.
But he says the average figures are buoyed by some big seasons over the last 5 years. 2020 was the second highest harvest on record. Even though fewer crabs were harvested, Stratman says they sold at decent prices this season. The estimated price for the fall-winter fishery averaged at just about $4.04 per pound. That's roughly the same as the previous year, but down from the summer's $4.19 average. The summer's harvest accounted for most of the crab that were landed over the entire season, which is typical for the fishery. About 1.75 million pounds of Dungeness crab were harvested by 168 permit holders in the summer. The summer fishery was shortened by 6 days because legal-sized soft-shell crabs contributed to low harvest projections, which doesn't happen often. But the department later allowed for a full fall season after accounting for the soft-shell crab that were left in the water in early summer. The fall fishery opened in October, and most of the region closed at the end of November, but a couple of areas stayed open through February. 66 permit holders landed about 325,000 pounds of crab during the fall-winter fishery. Fishermen can expect information for the next Southeast commercial Dungeness crab season that starts in mid-June to be announced early April.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.